Thank you and good afternoon. Just a reminder that May is National Beef Month. There's only 2 days left to say thank you to all those involved in the beef industry. A fun fact about beef, Disneyland in California sells over 4 million hamburgers each year. Tune in today when I join John Michael Marty around 2:15 for the chance to win a $25 gift certificate to be used on beef from Paris Frozen Foods in Hillsboro. All you have to do is be the fourth caller to win this generous donation from the Illinois Livestock Association. Certificates must be picked up from the Tally Broadcasting Studio in Litchfield within 30 days. In honor of Beef Month coming to a close, it's important to talk about the improvements to the beef production industry. With the right breeding, anything can happen. Brian McCloth has been raising registered Angus cattle near Viroqua, Wisconsin for more than 3 decades. Today tells more about raising cattle that perform for everybody in the production chain. It's a seed stock producer's job to sort through all the data and create cattle that work for his customers. For McCloth, that starts by knowing his customers and their challenges.
Regarding the production environment in Wisconsin, we get 34 inches of rain a year, and there's essentially 40 inches of snow throughout the year. And so from the 1st of November until the 15th of May, that's kind of the time where we need to feed stored feed. So I'd say in terms of differentiating the environment in Wisconsin, that's one of our factors.
Most of his bull buyers have other farming enterprises or off-the-farm jobs in addition to their herds.
I find more and more we have to make these cattle as maintenance-free as we can. And so what we're trying to focus on is creating Angus cattle that can calve without assistance and gain efficiently, and then at the end of the line put a product on the table that meets the specs of certified Angus beef.
That doesn't mean he breeds in calving ease at the expense of beef quality traits or vice versa.
Here's the truth of the matter. All these traits are heritable, okay? And which means that if we put pressure on them and we're diligent about putting pressure on the various traits, we can affect those traits. So, for instance, if we're concerned that marbling, if we pursue marbling and ribeye and we'll sacrifice other traits, the only reason we have to sacrifice is we haven't stayed focused on them.
All 385 of his cows are in the top 20% of the breed for reining weight, yearling weight, weaning value, and beef value.
I really have to say the tools that we're provided with by the association today allow me to put together a set of breeding objectives that I can keep the cow herd moderate, I can keep the cow herd easy fleshing, and I can still be in the top 25% of the breed for yearling performance, which is rate of gain, as well as marbling and ribeye. So, the only challenge is back on we as producers to use the tools appropriately.
The burden of follow-up is also on the breeders, he says, noting check-in calls with customers throughout the year. That was Brian McCloth. Keeping with the cattle talk, but slightly shifting gears to the dairy industry, farms are helping reduce food waste. A farmer participating in the No Taste for Waste campaign is recycling inedible foods to make electricity and fertilizer. The collaboration by the American Farm Bureau Federation and others seeks to reduce food waste, which accounts for up to 40% of all food produced. Farm Bureau member and Pennsylvania dairy farmer Brett Renford is participating.
The No Taste for Waste campaign just recently started with a few pretty big partners that are involved with it. And so it's an initiative to bring awareness to food waste and to tell the food waste story and to bring people together to look for solutions.
Renford uses an anaerobic digester to recycle food waste, which generates enough power to supply the farm and roughly 100 other homes.
We originally built it to reduce odor, which it does a pretty good job at doing that. But we soon found out after having it installed that we could put food waste in it and make even more electricity and more methane. So for the last 10 years, we've been recycling food waste, inedible food that we've gotten from various sources over the years, retailers, and most recently now a lot from food manufacturers.
Renford says there are other ways farmers and the food industry can help reduce food waste.
We think that food should go to those that are less fortunate first. So if there's extra food that a grocery store has, I think that's where it should be sent to, along with animal feeding operations. But when that's not a good option, we think that sending it to our digester or any digester in the United States is a better option than sending it to the landfill, because you're able to capture that energy from the food, which is the methane, and produce renewable electricity with it and heat.
If you'd like to know more about the campaign, go to notasteforwaste.org. The Farm Show will continue after these messages. Looking at crops today, cotton prices skyrocketed yesterday. New York cotton prices locked limit up at the open Tuesday with 90 plus cents per pound across most trading months. Don Molino found out what happened.
Dr. Jody Campici, Vice President of Economics for the National Cotton Council, says there were two primary reasons.
One is the continued drought in Texas, and over the past several days, they've had some record high temperatures. So there's definitely still some concern about the Texas crop, whether there'll be enough moisture to get the crop up this year. Another concern has been Hurricane Alberta in the southeast, and the concern of some potential flooding rains in the southeast of, you know, Florida, Alabama, Georgia area. Outside of that, there's several other factors, of course. We've got really strong demand right now. And for U.S. cotton, we've had strong export sales for both the 2017-18 crop year, which is the current crop year, and then the 2018-19 crop year.
I'm Don Molino.
That was Don Molino. The National Corn Growers Association members are making an effort to preserve and help to sustain the monarch butterfly population. Monarch butterflies are becoming more and more endangered as their habitat shrinks. There are also tips to keep in mind when farming to protect monarchs as much as possible. Efforts to help the monarch butterfly continue to gain momentum as farmers, agricultural stakeholders, landowners, and other citizens in the monarch flyway work toward creating significant acreage of monarch habitat in the United States. The National Corn Growers Association supports these efforts and continues to encourage members to take a close look at their farms to find ways to join in this worthwhile effort. This is a great time of year to consider special plantings that can give our butterfly brethren a helping hand. Much of the flyway is right in the heart of corn production country, so farmers can play a key role. Monarch butterflies face many challenges contributing to a population decline, such as loss of breeding and feeding habitat. There are a lot of great groups at the local, state, and national level who can assist in your efforts to help the monarch. For instance, Farmers for Monarchs continues to reach out directly to farmers to assist in education. Farmers for Monarchs is a united effort by farmers, ranchers, landowners, and the agriculture industry to encourage and enable the expansion and establishment of pollinator conservation habitat, including milkweed, along the monarch butterfly seasonal migration route. What can you do? Establish a diverse habitat that has a mixture of native wildflowers, milkweed, and other beneficial plants. Plant pollinator habitats in sites such as field borders, pivot corners, conservation lands, ditches, buffers, and other low productive land. Work with local partners also interested in conserving pollinators. There are several financial and technical assistance programs to help you conserve pollinators. Eight FFA members were recently named to the 54th class of U.S. Presidential Scholars. One honored member was even from the great state we call home, Illinois. Eight FFA members were recently named U.S. Presidential Scholars, one of the nation's highest honors for high school students, for their accomplishments in academics, the arts, and career and technical education. Each year, up to 161 students receive this honor. Overall, eight FFA members were named as 2018 U.S. Presidential Scholars. The FFA members named as scholars were Michael Z. Chen of Newark, Delaware, member of Newark High School FFA Chapter; Connor K. Erbson of Lanark, Illinois, member of Eastland FFA Chapter; Lane Hilgenhold of Tell City, Indiana, member of Perry Central FFA Chapter; Caleb L. Lines of Nashua, Iowa, member of the Nashua Plainfield FFA Chapter; Caitlin Henney of Eaton Rapids, Michigan, member of the Springport FFA Chapter; Tyler Noyes of Toston, Montana, member of the Broadway FFA Chapter; Brianna D. Maddock of Davenport, North Dakota, member of the Kindred FFA Chapter; and Bridger J. Gordon of Whitewood, South Dakota, member of the Sturgis FFA Chapter. Established in 1964 by executive order of President Lyndon B. Johnson, the U.S. Presidential Scholars Program was created with the intent to recognize the nation's most distinguished high school graduating seniors. In 2015, the program was expanded to recognize students who demonstrate ability and accomplishment in career and technical education. The 2018 U.S. Presidential Scholars are comprised of two students from each state, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, and from U.S. families living abroad, as well as 15 chosen at large. There are also 20 U.S. Presidential Scholars in the arts and 20 U.S. Presidential Scholars in career and technical education. Overseen by the Commission on Presidential Scholars, the program is administered by staff at the U.S. Department of Education. The Commission selects honored scholars annually based on their academic success, artistic excellence, essays, school evaluations and transcripts, as well as evidence of community service and leadership. Each honoree is invited to attend a recognition program to be held on June 24th in Washington, D.C. This recognition demonstrates the students' ability to balance their academic work while making a positive difference in their schools and communities, said National FFA Advisor Dr. Steve Brown. As an FFA member, these students went above and beyond expectations that are set. They are living out the mission and vision of the organization each day. The National FFA organization provides leadership, personal growth, and career success training through agriculture education to 653,359 student members who belong to one of the 8,568 local FFA chapters throughout the U.S., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The organization is also supported by 344,239 alumni members and 2,051 alumni chapters throughout the U.S. That's all the time we have for today on the Afternoon Farm Show. Reporting for WSMI, this has been Jamie Geisler.